This is Crossroads, the Get Religion podcast.
Much has been made, continues to be made, about evangelical support for President Donald Trump. That support, in large part, came with a list of potential Supreme Court nominees that President Trump was running on. He was willing to tell people, these are the people that I think should be on the lower and especially the Supreme Court. Many evangelicals voted for Trump because of that list. And now that the president has made good on that list, does that reduce evangelical motivation to vote for Donald Trump? Greetings and welcome to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Terry Mattingly is senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
If Amy Coney Barrett is confirmed as is expected, does that help President Trump on Election Day or not?
Well, I don't think we know, but it's getting to the point where we might be able to do some math on that. Let me start with maybe backing into this subject in an interesting way. At least I hope it's interesting. Have you noticed that in all the discussions of Amy Coney Barrett, she is drawing, with the possible exception of Michael Gerson at the Washington Post, she seems to be drawing universal approval and praise from A, never Trump Republicans, and B, some of the members of Congress who have kind of danced reluctantly with Trump. Have you noticed this?
Yes, I think I have.
I'm talking about Mitt Romney and Senator Sasse. We're beginning to see some people openly praise her. And I'm reminded of something that I've heard throughout the Trump presidency from friends of mine who either voted reluctantly for Trump or who voted third party but have paid close attention to what the Trump team has actually done. And over, I've heard these people say, you know, Trump is absolutely driving me crazy. I wish they'd take his smartphone and throw it in the Potomac, but I have to admit he's been getting the judge thing right. Okay. Now, if that's the case, and there are significant numbers of people, let's just hypothetically say white evangelicals, for example, if there are quite a few of them, maybe even 40%, according to Christianity Today and some studies, that 40% of white evangelicals didn't want to vote for Trump, they wanted to vote for other Republicans, and they reluctantly supported him as a way of defeating Hillary Clinton, but also their primary concern was the Supreme Court. So what if we reached a point where beyond all hope, Trump is going to be able to make three appointments to the U.S. Supreme Court? And of course, we don't know how those will work out from the viewpoint of cultural and moral and religious conservatives. Justice Gorsuch has already delivered one bit of a shocker to them. But stop and think about it. What if the court deal is done? To the best of all possible hopes, not that they were hoping for Ruth Bader Ginsburg to die, but I heard lots of people hoping that she would go ahead and retire before Trump ended his first term, something that was always not likely, but her health situation really did make it seem like it was possible. How would those people respond if the Trump appointments are in and that part of the bargain is sealed? I'm reminded of something right before the pandemic hit. And I'll go ahead and out myself here a little bit. I'm at a lunch table after Divine Liturgy at my Orthodox parish, in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and a couple of people are sitting around talking politics, and finally the subject came up, okay, folks, there was a conservative Catholic there. There were kind of a variety of people. The Orthodox can be somewhat complex, but everybody there's a moral conservative. And finally someone said, okay, well, what are we hoping for? I mean, in a best of all possible worlds, what would we hope for? Well, I threw my 2 cents in, someone else threw their 2 cents in. And if you put it all together, going around that circle of people with their coffee and their post-liturgy meal, here's what it came down to. Not to wish ill on Ruth Bader Ginsburg, but it would be great to see Amy Coney Barrett on the court. Everyone would love to see that. Then B, Donald Trump loses, and the Republican Party is finally free of Donald Trump and his impact on the nation as a whole. These are people that most of them would sincerely believe that Donald Trump has not been a good president, but that the Donald Trump team has delivered on significant numbers of its promises, but it's a very mixed bag, especially on issues of race and immigration and a lot of other things. And then the third thing they said is, oh, and we hope the GOP keeps the Senate, which would prevent Democrats from being able to do anything wild. Well, we all went off into pandemic land, you know, for the last half year or so, are coming up on that. And lo and behold, what are we looking at right here? I know there are people who think the polls were just as wrong 4 years ago and that Trump can still win, but I think you're beginning to see evidence that the Trump team no longer thinks that it's solid in a lot of swing states. When Donald Trump needs to make a campaign stop right after he gets off of COVID and he has to go to Georgia, how many decades has it been since a Republican lost Georgia as a presidential candidate? If he goes to Texas and a few other places that are supposed to be solid red, I think we can read the writing on the wall there. I was stunned when he was elected, but I would be even more stunned now because, quite frankly, Joe Biden isn't Hillary Clinton in the views of many Americans. We can talk about the wisdom of that. All of this is to say, I think at this point that Amy Coney Barrett's confirmation and her taking the seat on the Supreme Court could actually hurt Trump with a small but not insignificant number of religious conservatives. The only reason they ever considered supporting this man was the court, and now that seems to be done. I've been thinking that now for quite some time. And then lo and behold, a piece just ran in the magazine called The Week that has the following paragraph right near the top. Let me read it for listeners. The Supreme Court vote for Trump was never a good rationale for backing him in the 2016 GOP primary because every other candidate would have produced a very similar SCOTUS nomination shortlist. There's that list you so wisely just referred to. Back to the piece. But once Trump was the party's chosen champion against Democrat Hillary Clinton, the certainty that the next president would fill at least one seat, replacing the late Justice Antonin Scalia, made the Supreme Court, in the words of pundit Hugh Hewitt, quote, Trump's trump card on the never-Trumpers, unquote. And now that deal seems to be sealed. I think it will be very interesting to see if we see more evidence that even mainstream Republican leaders in the next couple of weeks are pouring their money, their interest, and their emotions into Senate races instead of thinking that Trump has some chance to pull this out. After all, the court deal was done. Does this make any sense?
Yes. Given the unreliability, but I do have a question to follow up on that, but given the unreliability of Supreme Court justices, you don't know what you're getting all the time. Don't you think that practicing religious voters might want a super constructionist, originalist majority on the court?
Well, yeah, but at the same time, what's the next opening? Now, you could say that if Trump is reelected, one of the older conservatives could safely retire. Yet I haven't heard any of those justices saying that they want to step down or that that's an issue for them. I think they're thinking that a lot of my friends and people I talk to and people I read and follow on Twitter, a lot of them are simply not satisfied with Donald Trump as president. Now, they're not going to be satisfied with Joe Biden either. But what if you sincerely believed, you know me, I've been honest about the fact I've been a never Trumper all along. I couldn't vote for either of the candidates in the 2016 race, and I'm now openly identified as a third party voter in America. But stop and think about it. I know people who were considering voting for Trump, but at this point, they're less interested in doing so because they sincerely don't think he can win. And thus, it would bug their conscience less to not have to vote for him again or not have to consider voting for him this time because, like I said, they honestly believe that the current situation with the court is about as good as they can get right now if she is confirmed. And on top of that, they're worried about what happens in the Democratic administration in terms of court packing and everything else. And that's why their concerns are now moving over to the Senate.
Terry, you brought up the court packing issue. And what I'm curious about is, as a counter to the theory that you laid out, could the prospect of court packing, upon which Vice President Biden has been somewhat noncommittal, I think the latest comment was he's not a fan of court packing, which doesn't tell us much more, could that counter the kind of, well, Trump delivered, therefore we don't have the enthusiasm to vote for him?
Okay, so let's say that you are Joe Biden or people with younger brains that are near him. And stop and think about this from his perspective as a longtime Beltway deal maker. What does he have to gain by opening his mouth on the subject of court packing? Okay, so let's say that he's in favor of court packing, and if you confirm Amy Coney Barrett, who I think in that first debate, he slipped and called her Justice Barrett instead of Judge Barrett. What if he comes out and says, "You man, if she gets on the court, we are going to pack that thing. It is time to go to war." Now, would that create the scenario you're talking about where all of a sudden in Senate races and in the presidential race, you'd suddenly have people able to wave that quote and go to war? Yes, it would. But what if he came out and openly said, "I am not in favor. I never have been. Donald Trump can quote me all he wants with my previous statements opposing court packing. My mind hasn't changed. I am not in favor of that." Now, who does that hurt him with? The Democratic Party left. At which point, all of a sudden, you're going to hear howls of anger inside of his own party from the section of the party that never wanted this man in the first place. And they only got him, quite frankly, because African-American churchgoers in South Carolina saved his career. So that tension that you and I have talked many times between the secular, the atheist agnostic, nothing in particular meets religious liberals coalition in the party, the one that those two guys, the two sociologists in New York that I've interviewed several times, called the anti-evangelical voters, the tension between those people and the kind of normal blue-collar, Midwestern Catholic and also African-American voters who tend to be solidly economically liberal. They're opposed to Republicans on like immigration and a lot of other things, but they are basically left-of-center moderates in the American frame of things. He knows he's got their votes. Why does he need to tick the left off by saying that he doesn't want to court pack? I don't see any motivation for the man to address this thing openly. And also, let me be sarcastic here. Do you really think the mainstream press is going to press him on that issue until he makes it obvious what he wants to do? What's their motivation?
Okay, what should a reporter do, coming back to your theory, what should a reporter do to test it, to test whether or not the evangelical support for Donald Trump will be attenuated by the confirmation of Amy Coney? Well, what should they be looking for? What should they be asking?
They should be looking for social media chatter about third parties. They should be watching to see if this new coalition of some Republicans and a bunch of more religiously oriented Democrats, this coalition that just announced itself in about the last week or so, they should see if the polls start to show a softening of evangelical and even white evangelical support for Donald Trump. Ryan Berg, who cooperates with Get Religion on a lot of things, about a month and a half ago, let me see if I can get you an actual date for that, he came out with an analysis of some of the early polling that he thinks shows, this was in July, toward the end of July, he began noticing that about 5 to 10% of Trump's evangelical support was softening, that it appeared very likely that Trump would do about as well as a normal Republican with evangelicals, but that Biden was going to get about the same percentage of the evangelical and white evangelical vote as Obama did in his first run for the presidency. And you may say, well, that's only 5%. Trump can't afford to lose 5 to 10% of the evangelical vote, of the white evangelical vote, compared to what he did 4 years ago. I would certainly, if I was a reporter, I would start watching to see if there's any evidence of this in the polls. Now, I can still dream, can't I, that this would also mean that Republicans could listen to the speeches by Sasse and listen to the speeches by Romney. And I realize Romney's not an evangelical, but he's someone admired by many evangelicals. I think they may finally need to admit that the evangelical monolith, the mythical monolith of the 81% of white evangelicals who just love Trump. Christianity Today also had a poll that showed that something like 20% of evangelicals stayed home in 2016 because they were reluctant about voting for Trump, and so they just didn't vote. I think we may finally get some pieces that acknowledge that not all white evangelicals think alike on politics and on strategy for the future of the Republican Party, even, or strategy for the Supreme Court long term, or they realize that anything that happens in a Biden administration is going to require compromise and some sort of negotiations, if compromise and negotiations are possible in the America we currently live in. So I hope at this point that journalists look at the polls and then sincerely turn to their religion desk teams in several cases and say, okay, Barrett's on the court. What are the evangelicals thinking now? And follow up with this high-profile analysis piece and try to turn it into some actual reporting.
Should they also be asking, what are Roman Catholics thinking now?
Oh, well, yeah, of course. And Trump seems to be losing some Catholic support. That's shown up in several polls that Ryan Berg and others have analyzed as well. Yes, by all means, because if the white Catholic church-going vote is even more important to Trump's reelection than the evangelical vote is. But this to me is very important in places like Florida. It's obviously important in states like Pennsylvania. And if we start seeing that Trump is in danger of losing core Republican states across the top of the Bible Belt and into the Midwest, to me, one of the things reporters would have to think is the Catholic and the moderate, reluctant Trump evangelical voters, are those two groups of people in play now? And if so, how do we report that?
Terry Mattingly is senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you next week. Thanks for listening to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly.
Crossroads is a production of Get Religion, part of the First Amendment Projects at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. If you appreciate this podcast, please make a secure, online, tax-deductible donation at getreligion.org.